We're going to deal a little bit today with pink and blue, two separate cultures, mix and match in work, play, home, and church. For those who are listening, and you'll notice that I have done that. For the listening audience, it's just that I have mixed and matched. I also have mixed and matched in relation to combining the two cultures, in that you see I am in a skirt, but I'm also in shorts. And so consequently, that there's a possibility for this mix and match to become a part of our society, I think, and it sort of gives us a picture of what's going on. My references are the same that were as those that were used this morning, plus by Norma in dealing with learning styles, really, and life together with male and female. And so we will be reviewing some of the discussion of this morning, and then I have been using In a Different Voice by Carol Gillian, and then Women, Men, and the Bible by Virginia Ramley. And those two merely as references. The other references, the Out of the Nest, a discussion by the Washington Post, and then the Lutheran discussing the church as it is male-dominated, which was an article not too long ago, as my references, plus my own work that I have been doing for the last 5 years on sex role stereotyping, sex role expansion, cross-sex kinds of activities, and I have been doing it primarily in the area of sport, but as a member of the adjunct faculty of women's studies at the University of Maryland, I've also been working on effects of sexual stereotyping. And then what I have done in sort of my own thinking is try to deal with that as we have relationships within the home, the school, the community, and in the church, and what that means for all of us. So if you will bear with me, for those that were in, the kids will be kids, or perhaps in some of this morning's, I'd like to take a few minutes to talk about the background as I see it of how we ended where we are today in relation to the polarization of the sexes, which really had not occurred with such frequency before approximately 1820 in our own society. That it was sort of the beginning of the complete polarization of this is masculine and this is feminine, or even the words femininity and masculinity, although the actions were a part of all societies in the past. And a reality, there really wasn't the polarization that occurred in the American society. And that's why I talk about it as really being two separate cultures. And as you discussed this morning, I think the women know the men's culture some, but that the men do not really understand nor know the women's culture. And certainly, the women have been in the workaday world, over 50% of them, and experience at least some of the things that the male is experiencing. The male, however, does not experience what is happening at home, and that's where the traditional housekeeper, housewoman, those who are responsible both for child rearing and for the efficient, effective running of the home, the male often knows really very little about it. And so something has to occur to try to mingle those two because of the separate cultures. But I think in the role playing, it really started with the religious emphasis of the role of male and the role of female. Although it may have some biblical references, the fact is within our Western society, we become more and more convinced that it is the woman who is responsible for the moral fiber of the family. She is responsible for the value system of the family. And it is the male who then heads the household, and the spiritual part of one's being is the responsibility of the mother. So the father can go wrong even himself, and it's not totally his responsibility. It's the responsibility of the mother. Because the female's role is spirituality and has been throughout the pioneer spirit. And then added to that is the difficulty of the male being head of the household, The female must be submissive to the husband. And that is a part of the American culture with or without Christianity. That the male owns the property, the male owns the female property, and so the whole existence really is male-centered in the American culture. And the female culture then has to begin to form of her own accord. And the founding of the real separation, I think, begins in the marketplace. When economically the male no longer stays home and shares with family living, there is a sharing on the farm. 90% of America was rural America before 1820. And so the entire structure of particularly the mid part of our country and the whole eastern part of our country is everybody is at home. And then the male goes to the marketplace or to the labor center, the woman stays at home, and you have another polarization that occurs. On the plantations of the South, that really doesn't occur. Everybody is really home, but what occurs instead is the Victorian concept, or the cult of true womanhood. As soon as I say the cult of true womanhood, what can you fathom up in your heads on what does that mean? The Southern Belle is probably the best example of true womanhood. She is pale, docile, submissive, but she is the belle of the ball. And so affluency in our society begins to show in how much the wife is the belle of the ball. It is no different in some ways than the Chinese concept of binding the feet of the girls. The binding of the feet symbolizes that you are wealthy. Your Chinese daughter does not have to go to the paddy fields and get white feet. And if she's already done that as a child, then you break her toes in the beginning of the 20th century even, in order to bind them. What nice binding thing did they think of for women in our country in this 1850 to 20th century?
Corset.
Corset is absolutely the center of the binding potential for women. And it is a part of the belle of the ball, the ladies of leisure, the affluency of society.
18-inch waistline.
18-inch waistline, but of course, as soon as you take it off, right. And it's incredible that that lasted until when?
There are still women wearing them now.
Yeah, some.
I wore a waist-incher when I was married 25 years ago.
Yeah. Certainly. Till at least mid-20th century. And it's a concept that comes out of the Victorianism. It's nothing that men created, by the way, but it was a creation that was acceptable to the society, to both cultures. And that's really important to remember as we begin looking at our society. Women love to blame men. In physical education, we love to blame men for preventing women from participating in sport. The fact is, in 1920, it was women physical educators who said, you will not go to the Olympics. The men voted for it, and the women caused so much problem about it, with even Mrs. Hoover being a part of the situation, and a big national organization forming saying women ought not to go to the Olympics. There was hardly a man that belonged to that association. So as we go around thinking about the fault lies in the men. It simply doesn't. The whole thing is just two separate cultures that have arisen and that we have permitted to happen, and we can see it happening in our own society. So Victorianism is probably central to the difficulties of those who would like to live in a more equal setting, even on the farms. It is only the pioneer woman who goes west that probably until the beginning of the 20th century, she is free, and he is free, to raise their family as a group because they are doing and living in the same surroundings. But the marketplace changes all that, and one goes off, and you don't really know what's in that world, at least until the 20th century. Women hardly know what that world is. Men do not know anymore what is happening at home. And so as affluency comes, we have difficulty. The social Darwinism that occurs around that 1820 to 1880 has another difficulty for women, because social Darwinism suggests who's going to be supreme? Who runs supreme in Darwinism? Yeah, the fittest. Survival of the fittest. And who are the fittest? Who can possibly be the fittest? Man. And that is a fact. And it is still a fact no matter what we're dealing with. Speed, power, and physical power, which also leads to mental power in a sense, or has in the past, occurs. So social Darwinism sets up the white male supremacy outside of the religious sector. Blacks are going to suffer from that the most. The black male, who in fact is stronger. And we find that in the boxing world, that the whole Jim Crow laws that creep in to the race in the 1880s creep in as a result of social Darwinism. They can't quite fit together black male, who is superior physically in a lot of ways because of their survival techniques that had to occur and the work that they did. And so the black has, they have to separate out, because that would prevent them any interaction physically in which the black is superior. But for women, it also affects them, and in the sport world, it affects them forever after with the social Darwinism and who the survival is, which moves into the elite class and the affluent class in our society. The next one I talked about a lot the other day, the rite of passage. And that's the rite of passage to malehood vis-a-vis sport. If I want to talk about the most masculine thing I know, and I'm describing it from and to someone from Mars, what are some of the things I might say about what is masculine? We talked about
body build.
You talk about body build and therefore weightlifting, wrestling, football, all of those things. Suggest to you women and femininity? Probably not. Certainly not as we're dealing. And so that the whole rite of passage is probably central to what happens to us in the 20th century. This morning, somebody was talking about that.
For some who aren't strong, I would think the rite of passage and does relate to the gun and the rifle.
To the what?
Rifle, guns.
Oh, sure. And you can, what's the strongest?
Very often the big gunfighter was not a big person, the way they are in TV shows, but just a little guy.
Yeah. And the Napoleon complex. Is sort of that idea. And riflery itself and guns in our own country. I think the whole gun war that we deal with the lobbyists that are so strong, has something to say about masculinity. And even our congressmen are easily convinced on the issue of gun. There's also $500,000 that's going into it. But it still has some of that breeding of the right of passage, I think. The rugged individualist, Theodore Roosevelt's going to make us strong and able country. He talks about the effeminate women, or the effeminate men made so by women. And he has a whole soliloquy about his wife, which is very interesting in looking then at what happens in football, that it's almost Theodore Roosevelt alone that keeps football in the colleges of the East. The beginning of the 20th century. He calls a meeting. He's already got his agenda. Norm is talking about how we sometimes have our agendas all out and just make everybody fit into the agenda. And that's what Theodore Roosevelt did with football. He had the agenda. So you can see that how important then comes the separate cultures. While the woman is busy trying to get that cult of womanhood that is so significant for her as she goes. But then as we move into collective behavior, it becomes even worse. Collective behavior, as I see it, is merely moving from the freedom of the individual to a more pragmatic society in which we collectively have to make up our minds what we're going to do. And that's what the big fight was in suffrage, was women going to be able to be a part of making up our big minds or not? And according to our discussion this morning, there's a lot of reasons why it ought not to be women helping to make up her mind along with theirs. And so the states that pass the right to vote first are not going to be eastern states, you can bet on that. Montana, Washington, Utah,
Wyoming,
it may have been the first one.
Territory did have women's suffrage and it was lost at statehood.
Who did?
Wyoming.
Oh, right. And the other thing that happens is in Salt Lake City, they have enough wives to convince to vote that some of them think that the Mormons wanted to vote to own the vote. It certainly did help, actually. If you have five wives lined up instead of just one for the vote, we can deal with the vote. And so that sort of happens. And as a result of all of this, I think as we go through the various time periods, we can see the influence of the themes that affect us in how it is we identify male and female in our society and therefore in our educational system. And we're able to reinforce it very nicely educationally by textbooks, by all kinds of ways early in our history. We find the real difference beginning, however, around 1950 to 1980. And we have probably the war to both thank for those that are interested in various kinds of changes and the difficulty of the Second World War. As the men went off to the battlegrounds, the women pretty well had to take over. And any of you work in any of those factories? We don't quite have probably the age category. You had women working all around you? And what happened after the war in terms of women?
I was gone, but I assume.
They were gone too.
They got sent home.
Okay. What's the movie that talks about that? Recently.
Rosie the Riveter?
Rosie the Riveter. Rosie the Riveter is sort of an example of everything she could do. Women learned a lot of things during the war in terms of their freedoms, or their capabilities more than their freedoms. What they were capable of doing surprised them. Because they didn't believe that they could. The male had certainly been trained that they could not. And they find it pretty exciting out there in the world. At the same time, in spite of the difficulties of war, the men were all over the world. Men in our society went places that they wouldn't have gone for 50 years. They saw culture. They saw all kinds of ways of life. They came home, wanted to find out more, some way had an appetite for learning, went back to school. The GI Bill supplied them with that opportunity. So the female went back to the kitchen, but she went back to the kitchen with all kinds of new thoughts in her head. And she began to see the options that could occur. And I think it led right into then the 60s, which takes us really up to date and all the kinds of things. What has really happened since the Second World War and starting in the second half of the 20th century, for better or for worse? What are all the kinds of changes that you realize have occurred within our society? Whether it has directly male, female, but the whole kinds of changes.
Most married women work outside the
home. Okay, 50%, over 50% work outside the home. What difficulties from that?
Question, who's taking care of the children?
The children. Have we ever had such an issue really before? Never. Because even if you worked outside the home, who lived in the same town?
Grandma
and grandpa, aunts or uncles. And the war again changed that. I was reading someplace, was it Washington, D.C., that over 50% of the population turns over in the telephone directory every year. Incredible. And that most of us will have moved 15 times in our lives, if we're just an average American. It's an incredible statistic that I've been paging through to try to find if that's really true. But that's a whole new movement that has occurred in no extended family. And it begins to be a much more serious thing about who's going to care for the children. And it's not something, the feminists some way thought it was going to go away, that we weren't going to have that issue. And one of the big problems in the 60s was getting all the women out in the world everywhere and not thinking too much about what happens at home. And I think that feminine mystic and her second book, Second Chance? Betty for Dance. Yeah, her second one is something about Second Chance, which really, you want to comment, I think you had some interesting, important comments this morning.
Well, I was just thinking in the 60s, if they weren't worrying about child care, perhaps it was because none of them were becoming pregnant. You didn't see pregnant women because the big issue was overpopulating the world. And then all of a sudden, in the last, maybe not even 10 years, all these women who are now 35 and approaching 40 and realize they don't have a family and it's going to get mighty lonely are starting to have those children that weren't born back then, and now it's getting to be a real problem. Because these are career women who are having children.
We seem not to have the problem early. Then the 50s, they stayed home. They went to the suburbs. And some of the feminist movement probably, both as a positive and some difficulties that are caused, then begin to say, we have to do something about the children. And that's where some then of the sharing begins. But it's really a tough process. What begins to be some of the problems with trying to decide about this child care?
No assumptions. You have to negotiate everything.
Yeah, that there has to be separate negotiations at home. And within that separate negotiation probably is what Norma was talking about this morning, the importance of networking and relationships that have to occur, and within that decision making. Somebody this morning was talking about what happens when the husband begins to take on responsibility, and then both the women and the men are threatened by that back at the ranch or at work, and the difficulties that sort of arise in what's happened to rite of passage is really what they're sort of talking about as they go. So as we move into the presence, I think a lot of the young, strong women moved into the direction of gangbusters, and that everybody must work, everybody needs to work, you certainly aren't fulfilled if you don't work. And so then we had a generation, or a decade at least, of everybody trying to work outside the home, whether they really sort of wanted to.
And by work, that meant professional or business work for which you were paid, which assumed that work at home wasn't work.
Right.
Also, it bought into the male assumption that work at home wasn't work.
It's interesting that the females did that, as well as the males, is buying into what
they,
is
they
the work.
What else did they have to choose from? That was this is a culture in which we all grew up in the assumption.
And what underlies that assumption? What obviously is the most significant thing then? Work or home?
I'm getting paid.
Money.
Yeah. I lost my chalk, but just a great big. A great big money sign, probably, because that then yields to the power. And so as we are dealing with all of this then and move into the present, it sort of begins to question all of the structures that we have talked about before. And so let's look at reviewing from this morning. For those that were there, or suggesting yourself. GAMS are great American male stereotyping. And great American female stereotyping that has occurred within our society that now begins to be questioned, but it can't be answered unless we sort of have all of the kinds of thoughts that are in our heads about it. what's a stereotype of a male? Strong. And?
Powerful. Breadwinner.
Obviously the breadwinner.
All-knowing.
But since I can't spell it, we'll have all-knowing. Some other characteristics of male. Well, he might be a breadwinner and still not.
Unemotional.
Head of house. What else?
Well, I did this with some of my guys at seminary. They put over their crude, which surprised me. But they all agreed that somehow you had to have some crude, and then on the other side, refined, which probably goes back to the Southern Belle. Keeper of the culture.
What to do is go to the conference.
How do you spell crude?
C-R-U-D-E.
You know why I spell that way? Because my family named me Joanne Hult and spelled it Joan. And so my tapes had this misspelling, and I have not been able to spell anything ever since. How's that for?
There's no correlation between spelling and intelligence.
No.
I overspeller.
I have 10 reasons for not spelling right. No, but the crude, well, yeah, particularly among pastors, it's interesting that they, and you said at pastors' conferences, they have to tell all the crude jokes they can because they're in a more effeminate or cultured profession.
And there's a real difference between a pastoral conference once a woman enters it.
Yeah, and talk a little more about that.
I mean, just, I did an interim up in Guttenberg up above in the local clergy, and it was just exactly the way Norm describes, and you just had to tell crude jokes. A good portion of time was spent doing that. Mm-hmm. And when a woman enters, they can't do that anymore, they feel deprived. At least they feel they can't.
They do now.
Yeah.
They go ahead and do.
Oh yeah, campus ministry. Were...
Oh yeah, that's true. Well, campus ministry, right? They're always a thing apart.
No, I think that's true though.
The advent of what's coming.
That's true. We're cutting it.
Yeah, whereas before you didn't tell, you didn't swear when a woman was present. That's not true anymore.
Women are raised.
EAR.
Yeah. I usually have someone on the board. Okay. Swearing.
Yeah. Hard hitting, always going.
Go-go?
Drive,
no.
Yeah, go-go.
Drive. Might be a better word.
Intentional.
You want to talk
well,
some
more? Well, rather than responsive, I guess, would be my, the woman is expected to be respond to the situation. And he's got his goals in mind, move right ahead, very intentional about what he's going to do.
Okay. Goal.
Would respond to different events that happen.
Goals.
That
they have goals.
Goal oriented.
Yeah.
Woman
would
be more people-oriented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Remember what I'm doing. Others?
Thoughtless.
Which?
Sensitive over here?
Insensitive.
Yeah.
The one who's supposed to remember the birthday.
Yeah. That's certainly the one.
It threaded through all that male thing, but I guess it's behind some of that all-knowing that is responsible.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Expecting to be responsible.
Just a little different than all-knowing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I sure would hate to lay that load on my husband. Heavy? I mean, I really don't see him as that much of a heavy.
Yeah. Any other burdens for him? Any other burdens we have for him?
That's one reason why men die.
Long, working, you know, they're workaholic almost, but certainly they're allowed their moments of pleasure and their moments of leisure, rather, you know, the hunting, the fishing, and so forth. But the idea that from the time they're out of school, they're, you know, occupationally oriented.
Yeah, that's...
They are a worker, by definition.
Yeah, I work, yeah.
And it sort of falls in with breadwinner, but...
The common part for that would be the queen, I guess. Queen bee. Just sits there and lays eggs.
On the other hand, woman's work is never done.
I thought it was stereotype.
Yeah, but even stereotype, the idea that a man's going to work until you're 65, you know, you don't have the options, or traditionally haven't had the options to take a second look at what you're going to do. You're going to change occupations, you change industry.
And in terms of your freedom for career changes.
Yes, traditional things are changing,
but traditionally it's hard for a husband to come home and say, well, I think I'll change my career tomorrow. Can the wife?
Hey, women are allowed to change their minds.
Okay. Do you have a label for that?
Yeah.
It definitely fits into the the stereotyping.
How about the men always, you should excuse the expression, always up for sex?
Oh, right. Strange you should mention that. That was the next thought in my head. Was sex fiends. And responsible for it.
Mm-hmm.
Other characteristics that we would stereotype. If I say...
Aggressor.
Okay, aggressor. It's different than strong and powerful because it's an emotion. It's a motivating force that he obviously... And that's why we have sport, of course, is so that we can do that for...
Put sport right between aggressor and up for sex.
Oh, that's nice. And then divide it in half.
In terms of dealing with men over the last 20 years, you know, the two emotions that most of them have been allowed, one is anger and the other has been sex. That in terms of other more positive emotions, those are certainly not.
Yeah, we might put the freedom to anger.
The freedom to anger?
Well, or okay. That they can, okay. They're allowed to be angry.
Just by anger, yeah.
Okay.
Polygamous.
Yeah, that's right.
Womanizer. Polygamous, hegamous, how's it go?
I can't spell all that.
Polygamous, hegamous, polygamous, hegamous, hegamous, woman, monogamous.
Monogamous.
I heard
that.
Double
standards.
Okay.
And it's going back to our responsibility for the spirituality of the woman.
The woman's expected to say no.
And she's also supposed to some way be able to keep the male, her spouse, from it. In the Roman society, they were quite progressive in the Roman society, but the female who is found sleeping with a female by his wife, they may get a divorce. If the female is found sleeping with a male, her husband can kill her.
Well, the husband owned the whole family.
Right, which is a part of the ownership.
Which is, yeah, another thing that I think we need to say is that the absolute head of the house.
Yeah, maybe within that concept comes ownership. My wife. My house. And in the...
It was interesting, the film right after the war was Mr. Blanding's Village House.
Oh, yes. That's the same sort of... You want to comment for them on it? I'm so interested in who the actor was.
I was going to say,
But yet women have a way of manipulating men.
And all of these aren't necessarily that they are allowed it, but the stereotype of it, it deals with it. Okay, let's... Beguiling, clever, all of those.
Seducer.
Which goes on with, and the difficulty, one of the problems with that being the seducer is the evilness of it within the religious context, that they have been able to put the burden. The male is not the seducer, that's his right.
What's it called, the whore?
The virgin or the harlot whore?
Yeah, whore, virgin whore.
But the seducer takes the power from men, even the whole thing of not having intercourse before sport and all of this.
Yeah, that is an interesting myth that survives today. A lot of football teams are taken to hotel, even at the University of Maryland, when their game is at home, they go to the motel. And it, when you try to trace it back, it's that concept of not participating in sport. And in fact, in the ancient Olympics, it was one of the five no's, that you had no sex the night before a performance. And that included no male sex, no female sex, no thought of sex. As you were preparing...
I checked out for masturbation, too.
Well, that was part of the total picture. No even thought of sex, it implies that very thing in terms of the Olympics. Because in the first place, you're not fit for Zeus with that. Because remember, it was a religious experience originally for Zeus. Obviously for not for his wife.
If we're going to deal at all with the other side, yeah, it seems to be at this point, you know, a woman was considered formerly to be unathletic.
Right.
Awkward.
Because, and should be, pale, a docile, female is the cheerleader, mm-hmm. male is the quarterback. And that concept survives in all of that tension that occurs within the society. It's male's turf.
I don't know how it happened, but one year in a junior college, three of us went out for cheerleader, three guys, and we won. And the next year, the team made sure that the girls won.
when I was in college, I was a cheerleader. There were five of us, three fellows and two girls. And we were for a couple of years, and after that, the men stayed on the team.
In most of it, it's moving towards that the male can. But the concept of the use of women really comes out of the cheerleader. From that 1890 on. What else?
Shapely.
Okay, which all goes back to appearance. Mm-hmm. That for physical well-being, and we're using this in sport all the time, to perpetuate it, is that we will prepare you for beauty and for appearance. The whole TV monitor is full of females for shapely. It really goes back to beauty, and not beauty for your self-esteem, but beauty for the male, which puts you there for, again, in that second-class citizenship.
But in the Olympics, they had Sassoon following the athletes around, fixing their hair, men as well as women, and helping with their makeup. So when they got on TV and did their thing, they really looked sharp.
Yeah, of course, that's Sassoon's. Was it the last time around, you mean?
I just saw it shortly
that's
before we came
here.
It's
the sponsored Olympics, you know, and it's Sassoon's way of trying to get men.
Oh, I suppose. But I was surprised because I did think, you know, they all really look nice. And you just, you know, some people just don't look that great.
Well, they wouldn't follow Babe Sahara around 50 years ago.
Yeah.
They took pictures of her, but they didn't have close-ups and smiling, and she didn't use the right toothpaste.
Tame brains.
I have a name for that. I call them flu-flus.
Well, let's go to the other extreme. You have the Irma.
Yeah.
Flu-flu?
Yeah. And yeah, sort of.
Dumb blonde.
But also the tame brains, that is, they could be brains up to a point.
Through eighth grade.
Yeah.
And
the spelling bee.
Oh, that's enough.
Yes.
What else do we have?
Just a question, though, on that cheerleader bit. Isn't that the female need for the masculinity on the cheerleading squad for the power, the strong men for the pyramids, etc., and the tumbling and some.
Why do they have men there? You mean?
Yeah, I'm wondering, are they having the men there for the pyramids and things like this, which women weren't possibly capable of building as well without men?
They might have used it for that, but originally all cheerleaders were men. And around 1890, they switched to the, as females moved to the colleges, they needed to do something with them, as I see it. And the University of Minnesota was the first one to have a female cheerleader. But it certainly can be used as, therefore, a rite of passage. If I'm on the bottom of the pyramid, then I'm supporting as I ought to, as opposed to, if I'm strong, my brother's not going to want to be next on the pyramid.
Well, you don't. Also, you don't see it the other way around. Although that could be done.
Well, that's right.
You don't see the women on the bottom.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm saying. And in fact, we did that as kids. I was on the bottom. He now has the bad back, so I don't understand it. Following him around as the King of Kings. What other female specialties?
Well, caretaker.
Caretaker, nurturer.
Caretaker, caregiver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably
both probably.
You got the emotional.
Emotional?
Yeah. No, we haven't had it yet. We have emotional beings.
Yeah. Awkward.
Except for anger and sex.
Right. Yeah. That's
kind of awkward, all thumbs at certain.
Why?
Uncoordinated.
My mother, I
no
said,
agility.
I should have been a man because I like to hammer and nail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the characteristics of shapeliness and sexiness demands coordination. But when you put it with other kinds of activities as the hammer and nail variety, then it's uncoordinated.
Can't fix anything.
Yeah, can't fix anything.
Hopeless.
As you look at them perform in other areas, which really, the whole sport world and the sport of the ministry are the two areas that I think have hit males hard in relation to all of the stereotyping that they can fulfill. If you just look at one big sports event, how much you can fulfill of this. And one cheerleading or drill team leader, what you can achieve here after the flag bearers have brought the flag in, of course.
Artistic.
Creative.
Artistic. Graceful. Cultured.
Mm-hmm. Graceful.
The
graceful is what is permitting women in some of the sports, that they're calling it grace. While the male diver, what's great about the male diver and the male gymnast?
Precision.
And they never tell you what he's wearing or if he has clean fingernails or not.
Coordination.
None of those kinds of things. Or who he dated last night. None of that. If you're watching, one of the reasons I'm here is the frustration I was going to have at parts of the Olympic on the differences that they're dealing with.
Someone really should do a book on that, though.
Well,
you ought to do at least an article.
Well, I'm in the midst of so many of them. The New York Times guy couldn't believe that there was no way to get me for what I was thinking this week. I mean, he realized that. What do you mean, no telephones, no telegraph? But he was interested only to a point anyway. when I started my sarcasm.
You gotta write your own, you don't let the other person write.
Yeah, well, I'm on one that at least deals with the beginning of
what's happened with gymnastics and sketch for us. I mean, we've become interested in gymnastics, first of all, through the women.
Right.
How does that fit all of this?
Well, it fits because gymnastics in our society has been a female sport. Formalized gymnastics of the German-Swedish variety, we now call calisthenics and exercise and lifting, and so it hasn't been a part of the society. But in our society, the male gymnastics programs are just now again getting off the ground. And they're doing it on the strength factor, on the high bars, and on the kinds of vaulting that the female doesn't do, the same as the diving. So that they're going parallel tracks with grace and beauty here, and finesse and strength and bodybuilding over here. So as they describe the shoulders of the male next to the body of the female, you're dealing in shapeliness and physique as two separate entities. And our society, you know, is so schizo that we're able to do that about anything. I mean, we really are highly skilled at our tasks of separating, yeah, rather than drawing together. And the only reason we have gymnastics, by the way, and track and field has to do with our nationalism. Before this, only men might be a thought patriotic. Women were really patriotic through their husbands. But after the 1948, well, really the probably 52 Olympics as an example, those Soviet Union folks, then East Germany the next year, brought all those female athletes that were great, and our whole society begins to scream. We talk about Title IX in athletics as being what really changed the world. I don't believe it is. I believe it's the Olympics, and we're winning golds hand over fist, and would have even with the Russians there for the women, because they declared in 1964, we're going to get our women ready. And slow but sure, the men have made, forced women into acceptance of the elite athlete. And then in 78, the Congress gave $16 million for it. And gymnastics was the first institute that physical education, men and women combined for training women coaches, that our society didn't have enough. And that happened in 1965, right after that 64 Olympics, when they got scared about the counting.
The interesting thing, though, the commentators were saying when the men won against the Chinese men, that now gymnastics was on the map in the United States.
We had to be number one.
Out of the right. Well, we had to be number one, and it had to be the men.
And it'll go into the schools.
We just got cut out of our schools a couple of years ago because of budget. I mean, it had been in the schools since the early 70s. Men's gymnastics and women's anti-Oregon. And it was cut out about 3 years ago. Now it is a club.
Interesting that one of the ads that they get, some of you weren't down with TVs last week, but the ad that kept showing again and again during the Olympics, talking about the patriotism and through the men, was a made-for-TV movie coming up, either The Power and the Glory or kind of a super patriotism, send men off to war business. And that in juxtaposition to the Olympics, I mean, the connection there was very interesting.
Yeah, that's another one. I guess it fits with aggressor, but I think you can say it's more fighter, the
warriors.
The warrior. The warrior, that's a better term.
But warriors. Interestingly, I didn't see the film, but it dealt with a child-father relationship, and there was a lot more emotion, and just in the clips, there was a lot more emotion of the father and child than I would have expected in the True Blue, right out of the Second World War kind of.
And a girl who wanted to fly. That was also in the clips.
Was it? What was that?
There was a girl in there who wanted to fly, and her mother said, all right, she can learn, but she can't fly, or something like that. And
but emotion, you see, is allowed in sport for the male, you know?
High five.
Yeah. Good play. Get out there. Hand slap. That's all a demonstration, I think, of what we owe men and that we only let them do it right here in sport and at Holy Village.
And they cried. They cried when they were getting there. I mean, waiting for the Star Spangled Banner.
And that's one of the reasons I believe in competitive sport, whether the whole world does or not. I think it's neat. It's neat for men and it's neat for women. But one of the things I think is it's been a safety valve for men. And the comradeship and the love relationship that is permitted in sport is about the only place, and maybe on a mountaintop, that it's permitted. And it is in mountain climbing where you see a lot of the cooperation, too, that goes on. You see a lot of male females right here hiking together. And it's sort of, as I see it, the beginning. And they're able to do a lot together. Once the male and the female both accept the strength of the male. And for a while, the feminist movement tried to ignore that. And they still are. They still want to have combined teams on the upper levels. And that's not what the cooperation is about. You're still in the same culture. You still can train together, understand together. But you perform in wrestling by weights. And that's sort of the idea, as I see it, in homogeneous and ability grouping.
So it seemed that in that case, that in wrestling, it would be possible to mix.
Yeah, the problem with the mix is the twice as strong male of 120. Because you have twice as much chance on the upper level of strength. Now, I can get about 79% of yours. So you can't do it by weight. You may be able to do it by a formula for the average female strength factor in the average male. But my 100 and too many pounds against Elmer's same weight, he's going to win if he's in any kind of condition. Well, now, if we put ourselves against one another in tennis, he might not win. Because of the skill that adds. But wrestling, football and those, the strength factor. But we could do something like that. A gold medal in 115 pounds is the same as a gold medal in 205 pounds in the men's. And we could do some of that merely for bridging the gap. I think sport is, in fact, one of the bridging gap ways. Because part of it is that the knowledge, maybe, that the male is the stronger, which has permitted many more males to cooperate.
The other thing, if you look at sports magazines the last 2 years, pictures of women on the cover, flat-chested women who were outstanding athletes. You didn't find that before. They were not ornaments. They were there because of accomplishments.
Except they still sell Sports Illustrated by the bathing suits.
Well, I'm not talking just Sports Illustrated. I'm talking Runner's World and a few others like that where the women are women of accomplishment that are on the cover, and they're not there because they're an ornament.
And even males, too.
Would you care to comment on the emergence of women bodybuilders? I mean, will this create an equality?
No, because unless
because
they're
the
using
hormones.
If the hormones and unless they're using steroids.
Yeah.
And if they're using steroids, then they come nearer a greater potential. But if they do not also give male hormones, it simply is a separate activity in which women have become interested in their bodies. The muscle tone will never have the same projection as the male, because that's a myth that we will build up. Certainly there will be some demonstration, but because of the muscle tone and the fat content of the female, it simply will be a separate activity. And I'm perfectly happy to have that kind of activity. As soon as we've gotten rid of this and this, it will be a very acceptable activity. My difficulty with it now are my own tapes, that still separates these two, and that we don't have really a single culture yet. And that without that single culture, if it's going to prevent the merger of life together with males and females, then I have some problems with it, but it's never going to be exact.
Well, I guess what's still concerning me about sport, at least as it's practiced in the Olympics with its win-lose, is that isn't that becoming that an acculturation into the white male?
Right. And I was going to comment on power. the women in the National Athletic Association, which was called AIEW, attempted to have what they called a female model of athletics, which was not completely based on the win-loss, nor on scholarships, nor all those kinds of things. And I was a part of that. I was confident that women could have an educational model of athletics. The fact is, as we worked on it and gained prestige and power and ability, the women's organization was taken over last year by NC2A, the men's organization, and it will be a duplication of the male model. And I had all sorts of vision of taking all of the qualities here, all of the qualities here, merging them into the sport world and having a NAIA, or a small college concept of a combination of play as sport as opposed to athletics. In doing that, I learned in those 10 years the importance of male authority at the top of all of the sport governing bodies, that it is a male-dominated world and that you cannot have the men take seriously a new model of athletics any more than you have men take seriously a woman's idea until just very recently.
I think that raises an important question. A moment ago, Joanne, you talked about feminist, and I think, at least within feminist theology, and I'd be interested in your discipline, if it's similar or not, we've come along a number of years now, so there's different schools of feminist theology. And there are those whose goal is really such a radical change in the system that they say a separatism is needed until there's a control that can really change the whole system. And or even some who say separatism is really the goal. I mean, the whole male militarism model is just, we just can't run the world that way. And then there are those within feminist theology who say the goal is partnership, the goal is emerging. And I don't, we're not far enough along to say which of those schools of feminist theology is finally going to have the day. And what you just said reminded me, what we talked about this morning, about women participating in their own co-optation, that women's missionary movements and whatever had power until somehow males saw that power and decided they'd run it more efficiently. But would you say there's those different schools within the world of sports?
Completely. In fact, I just wrote a large paper on that and presented it at our North American Society, and it's called Power in Politics. And it deals exactly with the issue that the female is not far enough to move into the male sports center and have decision-making power. So that the decision-making power then was handed over to the males, in a sense. The same thing now has happened with the Olympic Committee. So in our effort to merge, submergence has taken place in a lot of. We also have women wanting separatism within the whole sports domain. Give us 2 million and we'll run it ourselves. And I think that we didn't have an understanding of power and of using, if it need be, the manipulative power as opposed to moving head on into it. And I think that's the struggle you were talking about this morning, in a way. Wanting to be a traditional housekeeper in charge of the home and feeling a guilt. And what the women have done has been, as I see it in some ways, to charge right on through and haven't brought the men with them or the rest of the women. And that the women are living within what their effective, efficient ways are. And some of us, as women, are doing the same thing that we have complained about men. That is that men own the power structure, and that they are first-class citizens and we are second. And so what some of the feminist groups have almost done is to try to move from second-class citizenry to first for the workers in the professional world, and to say, sisters, if you don't come here, then you are still a part of the inferior world, rather than working towards getting these out of a stereotype and using them as These are all characteristics, good ones and bad ones, within our society. And we understand that by our cultures that have been separate, actually it is in fact true that these characteristics, some of them, are more characteristics of females in our society today. In some way we gloss over that sometimes. And these are characteristics of males, because we know what the culture has done, and sport is a perfect example for the whole world to look at on what we were like and what we have become, and that the characteristics change. And, yeah.
Yeah, it's intriguing for me to set that bet against Paul and Ephesians, which begins with theological base, principle base, submit yourselves to one another, and then goes pastorally into the culture of his time, which unfortunately has been made into a rule about the way that relationship happens in the culture of his time. That to return to that being submissive to each other moves to a collegiality and an affirming of.
I think biblically that's true in all of the theology and educationally, and that what we end up with as we're talking today is not answers, but merely realizations, and that behaviors change. And that we can change our behaviors, which ultimately deals with attitude. I used to think you change your attitude and then your behavior changes. But that we really can, and I've watched men and some women, but particularly men, who have been able to change their behavior no matter what their tapes were saying. And it has changed the whole children relationship. Parenting is quite different as I watch it today and love it. And Norma was mentioning that too in a lot of cases. So that fathers have changed the tapes. They're behaving differently. Now, when things get really tight, you may well go back to your thinking temporarily. And then the blue either comes out or the pink comes out in various ways around the home and the house. But I think just having reviewed what these are, and then remembering how that affects our children educationally, and the whole achievement goal of the males in the eighth grade that you were talking about is an important concept. That confidence for the male, lack of confidence for the female. Esteem for the male, lack of self-esteem for the female. The physical well-being of appearance for the female and a body build for the male. And all of these kinds of differences that are still true, that they don't die overnight. They're all there, and that we have to deal with them, and I don't think we have, you know.
I think it's also true not only behavior, but the structures of the influence inside of the medium is the massage, that is the structure beside, is apart from the behavior, has an effect. So that I think, for instance, the new church structure for Lutheran, or two-thirds of Lutheranism, is going to be very critical. It's interesting to me to see what at least I view as a bureaucratic reaction to a structure that would decentralize power base and broaden it so that you would end up, it seems to me that would end up providing a much broader opportunity for working consensus ways rather than Robert's rules procedurally and majority over minority ways. I mean, not that you could always do it that way, but it would nurture that kind of thing.
And I think looking at how women structure the kitchen of the church and how they are able to get volunteers and all of the reform movements that have been women's, the temperance union that has been women, that we need to bring these out more for that merger that ought to occur. Any other last thought anybody wants to comment on or deal with? It's not that we achieved, but that we're in the process of becoming so that we can all share. I think talents have been wasted on both sides, and that the freedom to be your own person is what we ultimately can.
As there are more and more models of collegiality, there will be more and more followers, you know, that compared to 25 years ago, things are much different. Men have much less on this side, and women have much less on that side. side, there's a lot more in common that they're seeing.
I think the androgynous possibilities in a place like this really shows it in what the men, some of the men are doing. It may be shown better at home and in some of what education is doing than it shows in the church. And the labor force, at least the middle management area, is beginning to realize the potential of women. And those that have moved back and forth, and what men can do in this back and forth, and that we don't have to deal in the stereotypes. Although we're still dealing in them, and we deal with them, you know, sort of every day. But just sort of reminding ourselves that, hey, I don't have to be that. Just on our own personal basis, and certainly at home, you can work on it. As the woman said this morning, though, it's really hard to give the boy the doll.
Unless it's G.I. Joe.
Yeah. Or, you know, some other way that we have.
Teddy bear.
Yeah. The soft, yeah, that's right.
Teddy bear.
That's true.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.